is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning, Bahamas. You're on the clock with Aaron Green, and you're listening to 96.9 FM. It is Thursday, February 25th, 2021, and it's my pleasure to be here with you this morning. I've got a guest for the day, so I want to just get a little housekeeping before I sort of introduce my topic. Saw some interesting things on my WhatsApp last night, and I wanted to share them. Especially after yesterday's show, because yesterday's show may have felt like we were beating up on the government, when really what I was trying to offer is some critical analysis, right, on something that was happening right now. I don't want people to think that we're just going to beat up on the government on the show, because that's not my aim. My aim is to have conversations that help us identify and fill the gaps, right, in government services. And so I want to share some things I saw online last night. First of all, did you know that there is a BIS WhatsApp feed, a Bahamas Information Services WhatsApp feed, right? And since I've joined that WhatsApp feed, I get regular communications from BIS about government action, statements, reports, press opportunities, and press statements. And it's a wonderful source of information. So for people who feel like they just don't have access to enough information to make informed decisions, go online, in fact, I think you can go on Facebook and search Bahamas Information Services and you can find the information to join the WhatsApp feed there, or you can call Bahamas Information Services and get the WhatsApp number and ask them to add you to the feed. It's a very good source of information. And it's a lot of information. I have to clear my phone every day, every 2 days, but it's good to have. Then I saw this thing online. I just wanted to share it. It's the Killarney Job Seekers Group. Now, I don't know if it's a political group or if it's a real constituency community group, but they seem to be doing very well. And so for people who are looking for work or for employers who are trying to find employees, right, go online, search Killarney Job Seekers Group, and you'd be surprised what you find. They have a number of WhatsApp groups that people can join to see notifications of job openings. I thought that was a really positive community activity that I wanted to share with you guys. And also, happening right now as we speak, is a critical consultative meeting of NGOs and the National Tripartite Council of the Bahamas. And they're having a discussion on the Decent Work Country Program. It started at 10. It runs until 11:30, but if you are interested, call the Ministry of Social Services or the department, specifically the Department of Gender and Family Affairs, and ask them for details for joining that discussion. Now, I know I can miss you if you go. I can miss you if you leave, Ma, but that's an important discussion, and you may not have known about it. And at the very least, if you stay with me today, you could follow up on it and see if they recorded the discussion or get a contact so they can share the results of the discussion with you. So I just wanted to share those things with you. I don't want you to think I'm just going to be beating up on the government, but we will engage in regular and rigorous critique, right, of government performance. I want to continue that show next week. I think next week we're going to do it because I want to explain why these other issues should be focused on before we begin drafting and crafting bills to enact temporary restrictions in permanent legislation. For instance, the focus on the housing crisis. For example, if with the new legislation you are allowed to enact a state of emergency and restrict people from working, right, on short notice, but you haven't put in place any regulations or policies or standards for landlords and for banks in terms of rent and mortgage in case people are forced to stop working due to the pandemic, right? I think that's a big issue. We had a housing crisis before the pandemic. So we know that that's an issue that we absolutely have to focus on before we move forward with legislation, because the resolution of that issue will impact or inform the new bill. So anyway, those are just a little highlights. Let me get to my introduction. Got a guest today with us, and I think it's a perfect guest for this discussion. Last week, my guest, Fernley Palmer, choked up when recalling a childhood memory of racism, institutionalized racism, really, because everyone like him also experienced it. There was a practice that Africans or blacks had to use paper drawings to provide measurements for their shoes. You see, these things have lasting effects in the lives of the people who experienced them, their ancestors, and our communities. And many of us have no real idea how the events of the past continue to inform our lives today and to shape the future. I went to high school where the headmaster referred to students as ladies and gentlemen. For many, and when I say ladies, every time he saw you, Lady Green, right? He'd say, Master Pratt, or gentlemen. For many, the impact of those interactions were not felt till years after. It positively impacted me, and I continue to try to inspire and empower young people in the same way. I've taken time throughout this month to highlight African history in the Bahamas, in the Americas, and in the world. Indeed, it's the seventh year of the International Decade for Peoples of African Descent. We need to know our history. We need to understand it so we can better understand ourselves. Then and only then can we individually and collectively engage the process of national development. We are a black majority nation, though not all of us are black, and not all of us are African descent. But the story of the African is entwined in all of our histories. It is the story of the world, and it must never be forgotten. So today we're talking to Dr. Chris Curry, professor at UB, and we're going to continue talking majority rule. And today we're also talking reparations. So I'm going to let Arlington take us to a break. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to bring Dr. Chris Curry on so we could start this, what I think is a really interesting discussion. Arlington, take them to the break. And when you're back, you'll be on the clock with Erin Green.
Are 65 or older, it is important for you to get immunized. Immunizations are not just for children. As you age, you are more at risk for illnesses like pneumonia. The pneumococcal vaccine protects against certain pneumonia and boosts your immunity. Contact your nearest clinic or healthcare provider for more information. Remember, immunizations are free at all government healthcare facilities. Let's prevent disease. Immunize, please.
This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health.
For the past 33 years, Great Commission Ministries has been defending the poor and hurting, feeding the hungry, and sheltering the homeless. We invite you to support our Live to Give program and make a difference in these challenging times. Become a donor by giving a one-time annual gift or a monthly donation of $50 or $100. Call Great Commission Ministries at 325-5801 for more details. Or visit our headquarters at 237 Wolf Road. Join Live to Give today. This public service announcement is proudly sponsored by this radio station.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning, Bahamas. You're tuned in to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, and you're on the clock with Erin Green. We're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen in on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or on Flow Channel 612. Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices. And listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can text us on the Guardian Radio text line. 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Powered by BTC. You can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 326-4259. And let me say to my callers, if you're having a difficulty calling in, or you think you're not being picked up, it may be a problem with the telephone line. So I actually appreciate when you call in and you tell me that, because there may be an issue we're not aware of. Nonetheless, keep trying till you get through. So, my guest today is Dr. Christopher Curry. Dr. Curry, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Erin. It's great to be on your show.
Listen, thanks for joining me today when I told you what I wanted to talk about. And thank you for sharing this little nugget, this article with me. I'm going to read a little bit from it now, and then we're going to play that clip, and then we're going to get into the discussion, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. And to my listening audience, we're doing this interview on Zoom today, so there may be a slight delay. Bear with us. As you know, I'm feeling out the delay and getting a sense of how the conversation is flowing. So this article is about reparations and a former U.S. football player by the name of Herschel Walker. And many of y'all may know Herschel Walker because he won the Heisman Trophy in 1982 from the University of Georgia. You know, Bahamians love football because it's a part of our culture, too. And we got lots of Bahamians who play football, right? So this is our thing, too. But Herschel Walker said during a U.S. House hearing that black Americans should not receive reparations. He argued that reparations teach separation because slavery ended over 130 years ago. And the Democratic-led House is poised to create a commission to study reparation proposals. So at this virtual congressional hearing a few days ago, right, this is extremely recent, this is the 21st or the 20th, a virtual congressional hearing on the issue is being held for House Resolution number 40. And I don't know why they asked a football player, a former football player, to join, but this is what he feels. He feels that the thing ended over 130 years ago. We're making too much of a big deal about it. And at this point, it's problematic because it teaches separation. So I invited Dr. Curry to delve into that with me, because last week when I had Fernley Palmer on as a guest, I had a texter, somebody who texted in and said that basically the conversation was making them uncomfortable. And they don't know why we keep hashing these things up, you know? And I tried to explain to my audience that Mr. Palmer is sharing an experience that he had that was real. And it wasn't just an experience that he had, but everybody like him had it. So, now that we see what Herschel Walker has brought to the U.S. Commission to Study Reparation Proposals, Let's play this clip from some people in Britain talking about reparations. Arlington, play the clip for me.
Tell us about the bailout of the slave owners.
So one of the things often when we're talking about empire, we talk about slavery. And one of the first things then is how Britain abolished the slave trade. And it's like, yes, Britain did abolish the slave trade, but after about 200 years of profiting from it. And the profits from the slave trade didn't end with the end of the slave trade, because the only reason slave owners in Britain agreed to the abolition of the slave trade was because they would be compensated. So just to underline, it wasn't the people who had been enslaved who were compensated for their loss of liberty. It was the British slave owners, people who owned other people, who were compensated. And they were compensated to a tune of £20 million in 1833. That's the equivalent of £17 billion today, which, to put it another way, is 40% of GDP.
40% of GDP then?
40% of GDP then.
Was 20 million?
Was 20 million.
So 40% of our total national income went in compensation.
And there wasn't enough money in the country to pay people. And so what the government did was raise bonds. So those bonds were raised, the slave owners were paid. And we, that is British taxpayers, both in Britain and the colonies, only finished off paying that bond in 2015. So if you've paid tax prior to 2015, you have paid compensation to people who owned other people.
Thank you, Arlington. Now, let me just share something with you. I went to school in England from 2006 to 2009. And they had VAT already in England, right? That means I paid money. Now, by I mean my mother, because, you know, parents take care of students. But I paid money, contributing towards paying off that bond. Okay, first of all, I jumped ahead of the game. Dr. Curry.
Yes.
Were the things stated in that video clip, audio clip, true?
Absolutely correct. So the Abolition Act occurs in 1833 for the British Empire, and it is enacted to cover basically all of the territories, particularly in the Caribbean, where you had enslavement occurring. And so what you have then is enslavers being compensated for the loss of their property and their labor at the tune of £20 million. And she's rightly correct in saying that today that is equal to what amounts to £17 billion. She's also correct in stating that that wasn't paid off. The debt that the British Treasury incurred from having to pay the slave owners wasn't paid off until 2015. And so that is, you know, that statement should resonate with us, and it should be an unequivocal debunking of Herschel Walker's claim, you know, of the remoteness of slavery 130 plus years ago. Why are we still talking about it? Why? Because we were only just paying off the debt that we were paying to the slave owners basically 5 years ago or 6 years ago, since we're in 2021 now.
Yeah. Let me read what I wrote after listening to that clip like seven times last night. This is well after Britain abolished the slave trade and emancipated the people they enslaved. But it is so close, I could still touch it. I still remember what mango tastes like in 2015.
And yes, indeed.
Right?
I mean, so what we see, Aaron, is what we like, those who are against reparations argue that, you know, slavery is so far in the past. Why are we digging up this stuff? Why are we still talking about someone? We need to just bury their lives. That's kind of the argument you're hearing from Herschel Walker and others. And then he makes this other argument. He says, why should a son be sent to prison for the crime of the father? And the argument is, why are people today being punished, right, mm-hmm. for something that happened centuries ago? But as the video that you played shows, there is an unbroken chain between enslavement and the atrocities committed as a human rights violation during formal enslavement. And the post-emancipation period, either in the United States or across the Caribbean, in which the formerly enslaved are still held in forms of bondage. Mm-hmm. So we went as Howard Johnson, one of our academics who's written about this. He has a book, From Slavery to Servitude. And that caption, that title itself explains that the relationship did not change between the Nassau merchant class and the formerly enslaved. They just found new ways of binding in a cycle of debt peonage those persons who were formerly enslaved from before 1834. So we don't have this unbroken chain. We don't have a broken chain, pardon me, where we have a rupture from the period of enslavement and then the post-emancipation period. Instead, we have an unbroken chain of oppression that lasted well into the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to leave that there, the weight of that, right? I'm going to ask you this question. What are reparations exactly, and what other groups of people have asked for and or received reparations?
So the term reparation has unfortunately been misused and misunderstood for a long time. Reparations, first of all, is not asking for a blank check for you. It's to just give us money for anything. Reparation, first of all, is a philosophical orientation, a paradigm shift where we're trying to repair the damage that has been done by the twin pillars of slavery and colonialism, right? Mm-hmm. So we're looking at institutional development because we understand that the Caribbean region in particular, all right, and I would argue the same for African-American communities in the United States, have been disadvantaged because of systemic and systematic racism, all right? And so when we talk about reparations, to repair the damage requires investment institutionally in those communities that have been disadvantaged, that have poor educational facilities, that have been underdeveloped in terms of social services and healthcare, that do not have the same opportunities on an equal playing field that the global north and other communities of privilege have. Mm-hmm. And so reparations isn't just about writing a check or just giving some dollars to people to do as they want. It's a strategic plan to repair the damage that was done for so many centuries. So that's how I define reparations.
Right. I define it like this. Reparations is the process of acknowledging that the same political, legal, economic, spiritual, and social systems that drove the creation and sustained concepts and constructs like race, white supremacy, right, and the oppression of non-whites still exists, right? The acknowledgement that it still exists and a commitment to deconstructing and changing those systems. That's how I define reparations.
And that is actually, that's like, you know, if you look at CARICOM's 10-point plan, and everyone should check it out, you could go to CARICOM's website and find it very easily. It begins with the first point being, acknowledging there's a problem. And not just acknowledging, you know, acknowledging is one thing, but then taking responsibility for it. Mm-hmm. Because, it's kind of like, a superficial apology when someone says, yeah, you know, that was a bad thing. But then they don't do anything to address it. And if you want true repentance, speaking spiritually here now, you can't just have a change of mind. You have to have a change of mind that leads to a change in action or behavior. Mm-hmm. So we've heard over the years, different politicians from different countries saying, yeah, I acknowledge that slavery was a bad thing. You know, that was really horrible what they did. But then they don't actually do anything as heads of various governments or heads of state to actually put something behind that statement. So there's a little bit of insincerity when you acknowledge a problem, but then you don't actually address it.
Yeah.
And so, you think about two Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, these different groups, that they have a 10-point plan, right? And the first point is always acknowledging a problem. But then from there, you have to go through the other 9 or 10 points, right? In order to get to the place where there's healing.
Yeah. So now I got a caller on the line, but I want you to answer the second part of that question first. What other groups of peoples have asked for and or received reparations?
Right. So reparations globally has gained momentum because of a number of landmark legal cases. For example, I believe it was the legal firm of Lee Day in England, UK, that successfully won a case going back at least a decade or so against the British government in Kenya. If you know anything about Kenyans' fight for independence, it was brutal and it was oppressive. It wasn't peaceful at all. The Mau Maus, who were Jomo Kenyatta, who was the leader, he became the first prime minister of independent Kenya. He had to deal with the British, who were basically putting his warriors, his freedom fighters, in concentration camps. And many of them died of starvation. Many of them died of disease. Many of them died at the hands of British soldiers. All right. And they successfully contended that was a crime against humanity. And bolstering that, was the fact that in 2002 in Durban, South Africa, slavery was finally defined as a crime against humanity. So you're seeing a movement legally towards case studies that have helped the reparations movement. Another example, you had Japanese internment camps during World War II in the United States. And there's been some effort to have legal address in that case. You've also had cases now, this is going on right now as we speak, where the Haitian government is seeking reparations for the French, who in 1825 imposed reparations on them. And the Haitians would not be accepted or acknowledged as a sovereign nation until they actually paid the French to be recognized. That's a tragedy beyond tragedies, because Haiti actually won the war. They were the most successful revolutionary movement in the age of revolutions, and defeated not just the French, the Spanish, the Americans, and the British, and declared themselves independent in 1804, only to have the French come behind and demand reparations. So what I'm saying is there have been some cases of success, limited success around the world. But I think both the Durban conference ruling in 2002 and the case against the British in Kenya are probably, to me, the strongest two pillars that we could look at in terms of making the case for reparations today.
Absolutely. You talked about reparations for the transatlantic slave trade specifically just now, right?
Yes, right. Yes.
Can you give us just one or two examples from non-African peoples that would have received reparations?
Well, of course, most people are familiar with the Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust and World War II. The estimates between 4 and 5 million Jews are suffering a genocidal Holocaust at the hands of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. They were able to not just get financial redress. They were actually, of course, given a homeland as the state of Israel was carved out of the Palestinian territory in the Middle East by 1948. Mm-hmm. And so that in itself is a form of reparations.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of people highlight the fact that the Jews receive reparations quite a lot of money was given to Israel. I don't know the exact figures, but the hypocrisy that people point out is that the state of Israel was created and they got reparations, and a lot of people focus on that. But we deny the fact that you had a Biafra, you had 10 to 12 million Africans as part mm-hmm. of the transatlantic slave trade that were forcibly removed from West Africa and brought to the New World.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are differences. We don't want to say that they were
exactly the same
comparisons. There are apples and oranges dealing with here, right? Because the transatlantic slave trade occurred over 400 years, whereas, of course, the Holocaust that I just mentioned happened in a constrained period of 4 to 5 years. But nevertheless, one Holocaust and one crime against humanity is as much as another crime against mm-hmm. humanity. And both are equally horrific, and both deserve treatment and redress.
Right. And Africans were a part of that Holocaust, the entire movement, because we know that the Nazi regime also experimented on Africans with their eugenics experiments. But Dr. Curry, let's take a pause in mm-hmm. our conversation, and I'm going to invite this caller onto the show. Caller, you're on the clock.
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm a first-time caller into your show, although I enjoyed your voice a lot when you were in the morning with the wife. So
thank
congratulations.
You. Thank you.
On
thank
your
you.
Show. And let me say congratulations to your guest. He is very eloquent and on point in everything that he has laid out here. I've only caught the conversation over the last maybe 10 minutes, but man, I agree with him 100%. But I wanted to call him because I'm an African-American living in the Bahamas. And I heard him, you know, I heard you guys, you know, bringing up Herschel Walker. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that is not the prevailing sentiment among African Americans in the U.S. Now, there are African Americans in the U.S. that do agree with Herschel Walker, without a doubt. But that is not the prevailing sentiment. Herschel Walker has been looked at as a failure to the black community in general,
okay,
for decades. So I just want to put out there that unfortunately, the things that he's saying is not prevailing sentiment. It's very underwhelming, very unimpressed with that, with his words, and should not be taken seriously whatsoever.
Okay. I got you.
If I could respond, Aaron, I am 100% in support of what the caller said. We are using Herschel Walker as a springboard to conversations about reparations in the U.S. to show the currency of the topic, that it's actually being put before a congressional hearing, and it's supported, in fact, by Biden, at least philosophically. So the point here is this, that I talked about the unbroken chain in the Bahamas. I didn't get into the details of the truck share and a labor tenancy system that was implemented by the Nassau merchant class in the late 19th century as a form of bondage and debt peonage. In the United States, you had the black codes, even as the period of Reconstruction was beginning, that served to as a form of voter suppression. And then you had instances, particularly in the Deep South, in Mississippi and Alabama, where there were attempts to disregard completely the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, which were passed by the Radical Republican Congress between 1865 and 1867.
1867,
it would also be a point of order to talk about the Jim Crow laws that emerged after 1877, after Reconstruction ends, which, of course, is usually typified by the Plessy versus Ferguson ruling in 1896, mm-hmm, which had to do with segregated transportation, but was then later applied to education across the board and basically justifying separate but equal facilities across the South.
Right.
And so, you know, these institutional forms of racism continued well into the 20th century. So, again, just like in the Bahamas, where we talk about that unbroken chain of oppression, we could say the same about the United States. What we want to say, though, too, in all of this, and I really appreciate the caller in saying this, is that most Black Americans support at some level reparations and the repair of the damage that has been done, all right, by the denial of basic human rights and civil rights. And the fact
a great number of white Americans support that sentiment as well. Not a whole lot, but certainly a growing number of white Americans support that sentiment as well.
All right. Indeed. Thank you, caller. So, Dr. Curry, I had a question way down on the bottom of my list, right, of questions.
Yeah.
About ADOS, the group American Descendants of Slaves, right, about the impact of their movement or how it intersects with or affects the global reparations movement. So I bring up this question here today. So I'm so glad that our African-American audience member mm-hmm. called in, because unlike mm-hmm. ADOS, I don't want African-Americans to think that the regional or the global movement is constructing itself in a way that would exclude people of African-American descent. But the way that ADOS is constructed, they say that if any of your ancestors were not American slaves, right? Like if they came from the Caribbean up to America, or they came from Africa to America, that you can't be a part of their movement.
And there's a fallacy in that, and I don't agree with that. I think, to quote Martin Luther King, an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. And I think that it's almost like the same argument. If you read the Walker piece a little further down, he talks about the problem with reparations is that, in the United States, you had African-Americans who were never slaves, who were free. And then you had immigrants who came in who were also not slaves. So he's saying it's difficult to actually drill down and figure out who actually should be compensated. Mm-hmm. And my whole argument to that is that's sort of like a lazy response to thinking about systems of oppression. And we need to take the time and the effort to track down all of the people who were victims and all the victims who were persons who were perpetrators of the violence and hate. And in fact, I would argue in the Caribbean, it's made much easier, at least in the Anglophone Caribbean, because the Amelioration Act of 1823 mandated that every slave owner in the English territories in the Caribbean had to keep a record of how many enslaved persons they owned, what they fed them, their age, detailed records. This is part of their registration requirements. And so from 1823 until slavery is abolished in 1833, for a whole decade, we have the most meticulous records you could imagine about slave owners in the Bahamas. And in fact, Gail Saunders made an entire career out of just analyzing those registers, and published a number of books based on her analysis of those very registers. So we actually have a distinct advantage in that we have clear documentation of all of the slave owners in the Bahamas, how many enslaved persons they own, and the age, the gender, and all other kind of incidental information. There's no reason why we can't pursue it. That's not an excuse.
Wow, that's awesome. So I got a text here, Dr. Curry. It says, good morning, amazing conversation. Can you provide or indicate where we can find the entire audio of the clip you played at the beginning of the show, the clip of the lady speaking about the tax payment? So it's, I'm going to piggyback on that with a question for you. To the audience, I found this clip on the Say As You See It podcast. That's Say As You See It podcast. It was only a short audio clip sent to me, but I imagine if you go online and search, you can find that podcast and then search again for reparations, and I'm sure it'll pop up. The audio clip has a picture of a black man with a camo baseball cap on next to the name of the podcast. Say it as you see it. Say it as you see it. And so, Dr. Curry, what I want to ask you is, with my long list of questions, can you share info on classes, courses, and projects at the university or the local reparations committee that focus on Bahamian history, African history, African diasporic history, majority rule, and reparations? Like, are there any social groups where people come together to talk about it?
Yeah. Well, let me start with what I'm doing right now. So currently I'm teaching two classes. I'm teaching a course in African-American history from the Civil War to the present. And that's History 421. I'm amazed at the low enrollment in the class. I only have six students. It's a great course. I love teaching it. This past week, we're on midterm break, but I assigned them some reading material on the Scarborough Boys. This was a case in 1930-31 where you had these nine young men ranging in age from 13 to 19 who were basically arrested and convicted for raping two white women. The women, it turns out, were actually prostitutes. They never actually had any interaction with the nine. And yet this is a case of the miscarriage of justice. They were actually not only convicted, but they were convicted to be sentenced for life. And it was just a horrible miscarriage of justice. It ended up going through a number of appeals and all the way up to the Supreme Court. So that's just an example of the kind of things that we've been talking about in this course. Another course that I'm teaching currently is Race, Class, Gender, and Ethnicity in Late 19th and Early 20th Century Bahamian Society. It's a long title for a course, but I mean, it's just one of those wonderful courses that looks at the intersectionality of those four categories that I just mentioned. And I have, I think, 26 students in that class. Every semester that course runs, and it's always fully booked. I always have a full class with that group. Outside of the courses themselves, we have a National Reparations Commission that has been headed for a couple of years now by Dr. Niambi Campbell Hall, Dean. Let me get all of her names in there. Mm-hmm. And a group of really passionate activists, and they're currently working towards a number of projects dealing with social media and giving a greater presence to reparations with our young people. We have a number of new committee members who are 20-somethings who are bringing a fresh perspective on reparations and seeing the need to really address youth empowerment and youth involvement in reparations. So stay tuned. There's going to be a number of projects I'm sure they're going to launch this year. I'm still on the committee. I used to chair it, but I'm now giving it to some younger and more energetic reparation advocates. Mm-hmm. So that's basically where we're at. There's a lot of work to be done in reparations, no doubt.
Absolutely. And I will add that there is an online magazine called the Journal, or it's a publication called the Journal of Revolutionary Liberation, right? And it's a great source of writing and thinking from people in the diaspora, people connected to the diaspora, about Pan-African history, African diasporic history, African history, and the movement, not the struggle, the movement for liberation. I got a caller on the line, Dr. Curry. Let's go to the caller. Caller, you're on the clock.
Yes, good morning, Aaron. Good morning, your guest.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure to hear Dr. Curry, right?
Yes, sir.
And I absolutely agree with everything, you know, all of this, because I have this knowledge, and so I'm conscious. So lack of knowledge is a lack of consciousness. I'm not into Herschel Walker. Just a little chronology here. Britain finished paying for World War II on December 31st, 2006. That's how serious debt is. They had incurred $21 billion, right? But let's say with slavery, I believe in reparations because I have the knowledge of it. Banks, insurance company, everybody benefited from slavery, right? And so the separation of relatives sold for debt. Like sometimes a slave master would get in debt, he would sell slaves, separate families, brothers, sisters, mothers, etc. So hence we became disoriented with one another. Our slaves were treated badly in the South. A lot of them ran to the North and left property, etc., etc. Also, I like how Dr. Curry stressed the eugenics and the Jim Crow laws that came even stronger and more visible after slavery because of they wanted to oppress 4 million blacks free. They couldn't take care of themselves, some of them actually. So hence the sharecropping situation. Now let's dwell into the sharecroppers. The black people were illiterate then. So what a lot of black people discovered, I forget the name, Fannie Lou Hamer. She dropped out of school from the age of 12, but she had enough sense to see that they were actually robbing the slaves because they were illiterate and when they were weighing out the cotton. So we were being robbed because of our illiteracy as far as sharecropping and numeracy skills as far as being compensated correctly with that. And that's not fallacy, all right? And so we must remember that skilled slaves were sent into cities to work because, you know, carpenters, whatever, et cetera, blacksmiths, silversmiths, they were sent into cities to work. And then they would send money back to the slave master, and then some of them would subsequently end up buying freedoms. And so we're looking at all of these different complexities of slavery that the average person don't seem to realize, right? And I mostly would like to dwell on the Jim Crow laws that were really, could be the really, really, real reason for oppression because it actually kept people down. Have a good day.
Okay, before you go, 52, leave your number with the producer, man. Okay, good. Because I need you to know, and I need other Bahamians to know that there are people out there that understand the wealth of knowledge that we hold, right, in our collective heads and souls and spirits. You're talking about eugenics, we're talking about mitochondrial DNA, right, and Sankofa, the principle of taking the best from the past into the future with us. So hold firm, number 52. Dr. Curry, let me read some texts before we get to the end of the show. And then I got a question for you. I want you to think about it. Share a piece of history with us you think we ought to know or we need to know to better understand the present political events, social events, or political culture. And I'll read some texts while you're thinking about that. First text, reparations is a must. It is the sure road to forgiveness. When we get our 40 acres and a mule, Black Lives Matter now more than ever. We must establish a research department at the University of the Bahamas. Post haste, I want to work there. There's already research being done, so get there. Start working and building that department, and I got your back. I ain't got no money, though. I need you to know that. No. Go on, Dr. Curry.
No, I think that's great. And just to be clear, that 40 acres and a mule, that was actually what was being promised to the African-American at the end of slavery and the Civil War in the U.S. after 1865. But, of course, that promise was never fulfilled. And so that speaks to, again, the systems of oppression that continued well after slavery was formally abolished over there. And over here, we had the share system, notice the similarity in language and lexicon, that also oppressed Bahamians after slavery was abolished here in 1834.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, Dr. Curry, I got two callers quickly. So callers, you hold on. Let me read these texts dead quick. My favorite text, green too straight. I think you are DNA pretending to be F&M. Morning. They always want black people to forget slavery, but every other race must never forget. Right? They want us to forget black slavery, but they didn't. They forgot to cancel that bond payment. That's what they forgot. I think that's all. No, I got one more text. It is literally revolting to me that in 2021, my fellow black people are still bringing up slavery and talking about reparations. I was born in the Bahamas in 1982. I never experienced slavery or oppression. I was never a slave. I am not a victim. And those pushing racial division and subversion of Western civilization by dragging up slavery into the modern age should be ashamed of themselves. Talk of reparations is disingenuous and disgusting Marxist drivel and identity politics meant to create a mindset of victimhood in our black people and divide or stir up emotions of hatred against whites living today to divide and weaken our society. It's completely disgraceful. That is a text that just came in. Dr. Curry, I'm going to read this, then we go into the calls.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you the expert. Go on.
I just want to say reparations is about reconciliation. It's not about division and separation. That's, again, another misunderstanding. The whole point that I stressed earlier is healing, but healing can't occur until we acknowledge the problem and we address the problem systematically.
That's right.
And that is what I just wanted to say real quick.
Thank you. And that's a biblical Christian principle, too. Caller, you're on the clock.
Yes, sir. You know, reparation is great and is necessary. But we got a system right now. It's what's you understand? It's slavery now. You see,
right.
Our taxation itself. We need some reparation on it.
Because the systems that enslaved us have never been changed.
Right. So it's the same conservative system. You know, and our politicians, they all conservative too. Every last one of them. None of them have progressive taxation. Taxation to those that need the same slaves, the slave children. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. I wouldn't even say that. You've given them too much credit. I don't think they thought about it enough to even identify themselves. That's why I, on my list of reasons why politicians need to take a pay cut, they need to take a pay cut until they could tell us how much money we paid the Bahamian colonies, right? How much we paid to pay off the people that enslaved our ancestors. And I want you all to know about sensitivity. I thought hard about playing a clip from a song by Rihanna that says, pay me what you owe me. I thought hard about it. And I said to my producer, you know what? I'm going to refrain because despite the rightness and the authenticness and the truth in this conversation, we're still going to be sensitive to the people that feel discomfort in the face of a conversation about others that lived through enslavement and oppression. Anyway, I got to get to my next caller. Caller, you're on the clock.
Hello, good morning. How you doing, ma'am?
Good morning. I am good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, nice topic. Let me make it quick.
Yes, sir.
After talking to Dr. Curry, I don't want him to explain to me or let me know or the nation know or the world like it was slavery. What's the difference from the slavery days? Because I still think we're in modern-day slavery today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Dr. Curry.
Yeah, I take a branch or a word from Michael Creighton and Gail Saunders in Islanders in the Stream. They have a chapter called Reshuffling the Deck. And what they're arguing is there's this Gramscian, he's an Italian Marxist, who comes up with this idea of the hegemonic principle, which says that people that have power usually give small concessions in order to maintain their power base for a much longer period of time. So Malcolm X would have said that's given a dog a bone for 400 years of oppression. The idea is that you will see that even in the Nassau and the merchant class, there were times when they would give small concessions like the Franchise Act of 1833, or the 1959 Act that gave men universal suffrage, or the 1961 Act that gave women universal suffrage. All of these are sort of seen as progressive moves, but really our economy and our power base and the way that things are controlled have not changed. And that's why we're sitting here in 2021 and we have an economic system in place where Bahamians really don't have any power. We aren't owners of our own businesses. We don't operate or control the mechanisms of the means of production. So basically, we're still at the point where we're being exploited by a system that's been in place for well over 300 years. And so, you know, people might say, oh, Dr. Kerr, you sound like a Marxist. Well, really, you know, if you were serious about critiquing our system, you would agree, whether you are an academic or you are a man on the streets, you would agree that we have a system of profound wealth inequality. Mm-hmm. And that system has not changed. And that is the biggest problem in our country today, is the wealth gap between the haves and the have-nots. And that is a function of the oppression that we have lived under for so many years.
Absolutely. Let me read this last text. Let's rejuvenate the slogan, I'm black and I'm proud, say it loud. It says the text is ignorant.
Sound like James Brown.
Oh, that's
like
right.
That's what you need to end on.
Right, and red, and the truth hurts. But what it is that people are where they are, and the discomfort they feel is real. Whether it's valid or not, it's real to them. So we got to be sensitive to everybody, but that don't mean we're going to stop talking, because as far as I'm concerned, the British slave trade ended 6 years ago, and the Ma'afa continues. Dr. Curry.
Yes.
I had a caller there, but we're right out of time, caller. I'm so sorry. We're at the end of the show. I got another texter here that is admonishing the former texter and saying that I should not have read that treasonous message. But I'm reading it, A, because they texted and they spent their money. B, because it's important to understand how we all feel. All voices must be heard. We ain't gonna be like them other people that tell us to forget and to quiet ourselves down because we make other people uncomfortable. We're not gonna be them. We're gonna do it differently. Anyway, Dr. Curry, the next time you come on with me, we're gonna talk about how David Cameron, the former British Prime Minister, left a Holocaust meeting, came to Jamaica, where the Jamaicans wanted to talk about reparations, and David Cameron tell them, I don't really have time for that. What I did come to talk about is how we are willing to build you a prison so you will have some place to put all the Jamaicans we're about to deport back home. Next time, we're going to talk about that. Despite how far away you people think slavery or the enslavement of Africans occurred, it has real living impact, real impact on our lives today. Thank you, Dr. Curry, for joining me. Thank you, Bahamas, for joining
me. Love the show.
Thank you for this full and rich discussion about us, about our history. Remember, the history of the African is entwined in the history of the world. Can't tell one story without telling the other. You've been listening to Guardian 96.9 FM. You've been On the Clock with Aaron Green. And guess what? Unleash is next with Lee Van Miller. Have a great day, Bahamas. Have a great day.